At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
And Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research, man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golf community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Good evening, folks, and thank you for joining me this week on Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. I hope your week is going really, really well. We're coming off one of the great finishes in U.S. Open history. My heart goes out to Rory McIlroy for what I guess I should say didn't go down on the 16th and 18th greens. Two short putts that, unfortunately, he's going to have to relive for the rest of his life. Golf can be a brutal game at times. Nothing is more brutal than missing short putts to lose major championships. Just ask Doug Sanders, Ed Snead, and Scott Hoke about that. So I hate that Rory, who has been a good sport in some tough situations over the last year plus, like when the PGA Tour made him the face of the PGA Tour, then hung him out to dry last summer when they did that end around and met with Yes or Our Mind without telling anybody, especially Rory. So I really feel badly for all of the things that he has had to go through on behalf of the PGA Tour, some things we've learned about in his personal life, and now this, really, really tough. So my heart goes out to Rory McIlroy. As badly as I feel for him, though, I sure do wish he had stayed around to at least congratulate Bryson. The video of him immediately leaving the course without saying a word to anybody, I don't think was a very good look for him or the PGA Tour. I understand his emotions were running hot. I can also understand not wanting to relive that moment in front of the media over and over and over again. Get away from the situation, calm down. But to not congratulate Bryson, in my opinion, showed poor sportsmanship. I don't believe it's what we would teach our kids to do. It's certainly not what Arnie, Jack, or Tiger would have done. Like I say, when, for good or bad, he's the face of the PGA Tour, that face wasn't good in that moment. On a positive side, huge congratulations to Bryson DeChambeau. Boy, is he fun to watch. And the remake of his personality, that transformation, however or whoever made it happen, it's been 180 degrees from what it was a couple of years ago. Kudos to him for making the change and for how great he was with the crowd, even mid-round, shaking hands, fist-bumping people, interacting with them when he's on the tee and in between shots. His reactions were great when he came through in the clutch. And I particularly love that he stuck around for 2.5 hours after he won to sign every autograph. That is what Arnie would have done. All right, on to tonight's show. In part one, I'll be joined by our man, Tom Patry. TP and I are going to break down the good, the bad, and the ugly from the U.S. Open. Following him, I'll be joined by 2013 Senior Open champion, Mark Wiebe. I'm sure Weebs and I'll do the same thing. We'll also look ahead to the Open Championship at Royal Troon. The first Open Championship that Mark played in was at Royal Troon, and the first Senior Open Championship that he played in was there as well. So a lot of great insights for him on what we can look forward to at the Open Championship. Then in part two of this week's show, I'm going to be joined by one of the top fitness instructors on the planet and a wonderful lady who is also Level 3 TPI certified and certified by Golf Digest, and that's Courtney Weber. She's going to make her Next on the Tee debut. Very excited to have Courtney as part of this week's show. Following her, I'm going to be joined by a guy who's been a great friend over the years on the football show Thursday Night Tailgate, and that is Cree Morris. Cree played his college ball at San Diego State alongside Marshall Faulk. He also played over in NFL Europe. He's now one of the top quarterback coaches in the country and also a pretty fair golfer. So I'm excited to have him with me as we round out part two of this week's show. Before we get things started, I want to send out a huge shout out to Bob Ross. Bob is 77 years old and a resident of Greensburg, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Pittsburgh. On June 3rd, he was out playing golf with a couple of his buddies at Mount Odin Park Golf Course there in Greensburg. And Bob makes not one, but two hole-in-ones. How great is that? The first one comes on the 104-yard fourth hole. He found the bottom of the cup there with a 9-iron. Then on the back nine, showing everyone that the first one wasn't a fluke, he makes another hole-in-one on the 142-yard 11th hole using a 26-degree hybrid. Look, I've been playing the game for almost 50 years, don't have a hole-in-one. Bob Ross goes out and makes two in the same round. You go, Bob. Congrats, my friend. What an amazing feat. I can only imagine how great the feelings were when you found both of those balls at the bottom of the cup. I wish you many, many more to come. Thanks as well to David Kelsey for sharing the story with me. If you've got a great golf story or you witnessed one, please share it with me by going online to chris@nextonthetee.net. Send me an email. We'll get that story on the show for you as well. Okay, before I bring TP into the show, I want to start off by talking about the great people over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a company that I have loved my entire life and have been drinking since I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, the secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best-tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lie and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddies trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, The Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You got to see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com. to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. All right, now back in the house is our resident director of instruction, Tom Patrick. You can find him down at Twin Eagles Club in Naples, Florida. He is a 13-time Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, a 4-time PGA Teacher of the Year, 3-time Golf Digest Best in the State, including this year's edition. And he is back with me after a long hiatus here on Next on the Tee. Hey, TP, how are you, my friend?
Chrissy.
Ah, it's so pleasant to hear the sound, the singing sounds of your vocal cords, my friend. How has it been?
Next question, please.
Ah, this ought to be fun tonight. Okay, first things first, let's talk U.S. Open, my friend, because it was great to see Bryson come back and win here after coming up one shot short at the PGA.
It was for me.
I thought it was fantastic. I think Rory stated,
what are you on the live bandwagon all of a sudden?
What are you talking about?
Now all of a sudden you're on the live bandwagon because Bryson's your boy.
I'm very excited to see Bryson win this golf tournament. Even Rory in his prepared statement, which I'm sure was written by somebody else.
Read between the lines. Prepared statement.
Yes. I'm sure it was written by somebody else, but in that prepared statement, he said Bryson is exactly what the game of golf needs right now. And I couldn't agree with that statement more.
Oh, no. God. I'm going to throw up here. This is what this is going to be about tonight. And you know what a big fan I am of the LPGA Tour. But you want to talk about the LPGA Tour? What do you want to talk about?
We got to talk U.S. Open. Come on. That was great. You don't think that was great?
So far, we completely disagree with each other. What's the next question?
That's all I got. I got a whole bunch about the U.S. Open. Okay, we got to talk that.
Go ahead. Let's keep going about the U.S. Open. Bryson, great. Wonderful win.
Tell me about what you saw this weekend. Share with me. What are your thoughts about what you saw?
I saw the best bunker shot in the history of golf in a pressure situation.
Yeah.
On 18 by DeChambeau, no doubt about it. I saw Rory barf on his shoes twice in the last five holes. I mean, you know, I'm listening to a friend of mine on Sirius XM who shall go unnamed, but we'll give you a hint. He lost to Tiger in a playoff at Torrey Pines. And he said that he made the comment Rory actually hit a good putt on 18. He just misread it. And I thought to myself, what are you smoking, dude? That was one of the biggest decel up and out of it. Gag, slider, never started online, didn't hit in the center of the club face, bad putts. And I mean, Rory's going to be remembered now the same way Ed Snead and help me.
Doug Sanders
at St. Andrews, and also Scott Hoke at Augusta. Ed Snead and Scott Hoke at Augusta, and Doug Sanders at St. Andrews is remembered. And they will replay those two putts every year before that major, anytime he's in contention in a major for the rest of his life. You cannot run and hide from this anymore, Rory. It's part of your DNA now. And that's too bad, because that's not really fair to do that to anybody. But that's the way Sanders is remembered when he loses by a shot to Nicklaus. That's why Hoke and Ed Snead are remembered at Augusta for, you know, giving away that golf tournament that would have been a career changer for them. And this right here, my friend, is going to be hung around Rory's neck for as long as he's breathing the air on this earth.
So let's take that and go further with it, Tom, because Rory's got a lot of golf life left. Huh?
I thought I went pretty far there, but
you did. I want to take it further. Because Rory's got a lot of golf life left. This career is going to go on for who knows how many more years, whether it's on the regular tour and when he turns 50 to go on to the Champions Tour if he so chooses to play in that. So he's got a lot of golf left to play. How do you compartmentalize, to your point, every time now, whether it's in just a regular PGA Tour event, we've got the Open Championship coming up in a month and a lot of majors left in his career. The next time he's standing over a 2-foot slider or a 3 or 4 foot putt that means something outside of finishing tied for 20th or something along those lines, how do you compartmentalize that and not let that thought come back into your head?
Some people can and some people never will. So it remains to be seen, I think, Chris, if Rory's able to do that. I mean, you know, as you know, in golf history, some of these situations have ended people's careers. And they've never been heard from again. Now, I think he's a much better player than that. And I think he's so talented, but he's clearly, you know, we have the driving into the Butler cabin at Augusta episode. And we thought we had that Masters 1 standing on 10T. We had this situation. We've had several situations in his career where, you know, he's definitely spit the bit coming down the, you know, the express lane of the highway in the last 100 yards. This is another one of those instances. It remains to be seen whether you can put that away or not. And I got to tell you, Chris, you know, on a world stage at a major, and in this major, the U.S. Open, obviously one of the grandest in our national championship. 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, 10 years removed from his last major,
right?
With a lot of near misses in recent history. Man, there's a lot of scar tissue here, man. there's an awful lot of scar tissue here. Can you put this away? Or does it resurface every single time you're in the hunt with three or four holes left to play and you're in a pressure-packed situation on really slick, firm, fast greens with those gremlins running around in your coconut? I mean, can you put it away? I don't know. It's hard, man. I mean, it's a really hard...
We saw
hard
Phil test. Do it, right? After the 06 meltdown in Phil the same who? Tournament.
Phil who?
Mickelson. Maybe you've heard of him. Won a few times.
And another one of my favorites. Keep going.
What I'm saying, we saw Phil have a historic meltdown on the last hole of the U.S. Open when he should have won it.
Yep.
He was able to put that behind him and go on and win some majors after that.
Has he ever won the Open?
No.
No. Okay. And has he ever really played well again in the Open?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. Next question.
All right. So in your mind, did Rory lose the tournament or did Bryson win it?
I think you can build a pretty sound argument either way, right? I mean, you know, Bryson, you know, if you look at his driving stats for the week, he was absentee off the tee. I mean, he pounded it 9 million miles. And how many times did he hit it in the wire grass where it bounced around, and you get up there and he had a clean lie? I mean, if we're in Vegas, we'd be betting against it the next time he hit it in there, right? But he never really hit it in the crap and came up where with the exception of 18, with the root there in the tree. But for 71 holes, he hit it all over the lot.
Yeah,
really, and could put the club on the ball almost every single time, which was amazing to me. How many times he came up with a clean lie and a short iron in his hand and hit a wonderful shot like he was in the middle of the fairway up on the green. So, listen, when you win things, when you win majors, we saw Freddie in the bank at number 12 at Augusta. How did that ball stay on that bank? Right? When you're going to win, things happen that go your way. He said it himself, if he had 100 chances in that bunker again, he might hit that shot four times, something like that, but maybe not as good as that one. So when it's your turn, those things happen. So you could build that argument. On the other hand, if Rory did what he's supposed to do from 4 feet and from 2 feet, the one on 16 was 2 feet, no more. Okay. And by the way, the one on 16 had nothing in it. It wasn't like it was a slider. Or, you know, it moved radically one way or the other. It was a straight in stock 2-footer that you can build that argument either way. Did Bryson win or did Rory lose it? Take your pick, roll the dice. When do you like?
So, what's your take on Rory immediately leaving the golf course after Bryson's putt goes in on 18, not even sticking around long enough to at least be gracious and go over and shake Bryson's hand? If you didn't want to talk to the media, I get it. But I'm having a hard time with I'm exiting stage left without showing any sportsmanship.
My immediate answer is I agree with you 1,000%. But I know how emotional I was when I played, and I played well and I played poorly. And I didn't want to stick around when I played poorly either. I mean, I didn't want to speak to anybody. I probably would have shot him a text right away and say, listen, pal, way to go. Great win. But I just had to get out of there or something. But he, in all accounts, he didn't do that either. So I think it was a kind of a, you know, he could have stayed in the scoring area where nobody would bother him and nobody could get to him. And Bryson would walk in, he could shake his hand right there. We would have seen that on camera, give him a hug and then exit out the back door. But he didn't do that either. I thought it was kind of a bullshit move that he didn't do something like that.
Yeah, to me, when you're Rory McIlroy, and for good or bad, right now, you're essentially the face of the PGA Tour. And I know the PGA Tour hasn't been kind to him being that face, but it's not what Arnie would have done. It's not what Jack would have done. It's not what even Tiger would have done.
No, you're right. I mean, Chris, I agree with you. I mean, I think it was a bad move. And, you know, again, I'm listening to SiriusXM saying that, you know, I don't blame him one bit. I wouldn't have stuck around either. You know, you're right. Jack wouldn't have done it. Tiger wouldn't have done it. And Arnie wouldn't have done it. And I guess I'm a dinosaur, Chris. I'm 65 years old. And I was taught by people that, you know what, you shook the guy's hand, you looked him in the eye and said, nice going, you know, No matter how much it hurt, that was your obligation as a player. They're not criticizing him very much for that. And anybody that's not criticizing for that in the media, shame on you, because it's a bullshit move.
He said he's going to take a few weeks away from the game now to process everything and build himself back up so he can defend his Scottish Open Championship. It seems like with all the things that Rory has been through, we've heard about the marriage. It's on again. It's off again. We know about his role on the Players Council. That's on again. It's off again. So there's been a lot of
And Chris, I love Liv. I hate Liv. Yeah. Those guys shouldn't have a pathway back. Those guys should have a pathway back. You know what? I'm going to get blasted by my friends in this one and a lot of people in my industry. But Rory speaks out of both sides of his mouth. You know, coming down the stretch with Rory and DeChambeau, I had no dog in the fight. I really had no dog in the fight. I mean, he just speaks out of both sides of his mouth. And it's kind of like you can play 100 sound bites right now where he's contradicting his own previous quote on a number of topics. You know, make up your mind, man. Make up your mind.
Let's go to the positive side. Let's talk about...
Here we go.
Let's talk about what Bryson did, though. I mean, to me, it was impressive to see him. He had a 3-shot lead at the beginning of the day. He falls to 2 strokes behind Rory at one point there on the back nine. Didn't hang his head. Didn't go into the tank. Kept playing and pushing himself. To me, that's very impressive from a young man who, not all that long ago, we thought he had issues with his personality. He may have been a whiner and a baby and all that sort of stuff. For the way that he conducted himself on the golf course and the way he interacted with the fans, I thought it was absolutely spectacular.
No, I think in the sense of Rory saying, or somebody preparing a statement for Rory saying, it's just what golf needs right now. There's some truth in that. I got to believe this, because somebody got him, pulled him aside, who he has some respect for, and said, dude, you got to turn this around because you're like Darth Vader right now, and you need to be, you know, Luke Skywalker, and you're not. And they sat him down, and somebody gave him some awfully good advice, and luckily he listened to whoever that was, and he's changed his image 180 degrees. Now, my question to you, is it real, you know, or is it Memorex? You know, is it a stage show, or is it really and truly sincere? The about face is so abrupt and so 180, I'm having a little trouble swallowing it. Now, the general public loves it. Listen, the general public eats that stuff up. They just, you know, they just love that. They love John Daly. He's an idiot. He's an idiot. They love him. He's a drunk. He's a wife beater. He's an alcoholic. He's you know, he had more handcuffs on than, you know, Chantilly Lace. I mean, and they love him.
And he's like the everyman.
He's like Huck Finn, right? But again, as a 65-year-old professional and as a traditionalist, I got to take a deep breath on that deal. You know, I mean, I'm not sure if it's real. I hope it is. I hope it really is real. And I hope John Daly doesn't have a tragic ending. I hope it's okay. I wouldn't wish a bad thing on him. But it's hard to watch for me as an old dinosaur, that I know I am.
Well, I think it is genuine. I think if you go out and you look at his YouTube channel, and he made reference to this several times in his post-tournament press conferences and interviews, that content that's out there, and it's been out there for a while, and he's interacted with lots of different players, he has said that that has allowed him to show his true side. And again, these posts aren't just from the last week or month. There's a lot of great content over a long period of time. He says being in front of that camera has drawn himself out and let people see who he truly is. So I think kudos to him. He made the transition, whatever got him to make that transition, and he's done a fantastic job of it. I hope he gets the credit he deserves.
I hope you're right, Chris. I hope it's 100% true that he had a wake-up call. It's real. It's sincere. I really hope it is.
Yeah, so do I.
I also hope that someday the PGA Tour is the PGA Tour again. and it's not owned by a foreign entity, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen ever again or not.
Yeah, I keep hearing rumors, speaking of the proposed merger that's supposed to be out there, I keep hearing rumors from people inside the industry that the deal is actually already done, and they are just waiting to announce it. Now, I thought they would announce it today or yesterday, coming out of, you know, waiting for the U.S. Open to be over. Hey, let's wait till that's over. Let's not take the shine off of that, and let's then come out and talk about it. We've got this month in between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. I was expecting something, like I said, yesterday or today. It obviously didn't happen. So I'm hoping that is forthcoming.
And let me ask you one other thing, just on a little side note. I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you like the schedule?
The schedule, the PGA Tour schedule?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it needs some help. I think, you know, the idea that we have some of these signature events right before or right after a major kind of takes away from some things.
How about the fact that you have a PGA Championship and U.S. Open within 3 weeks of each other?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, we're used to a month, right?
I hate the schedule. Hate it.
What do you think they need to do differently?
I just
space it out more?
Yeah, I just think it's just too compressed, you know, and to Scotty's point, you know, you play in the PGA, and then you play in an elevated event, then you play in the Open. How do you get up to, you know, like for that, such different events 3 weeks in a row on really ball-busting golf courses where it's just taking so much out of you? And how do you really put your best foot forward? I mean, Chris, in our lifetime, the Masters was in April, the U.S. Open was in June, the Open Championship was in July, and the PGA was in August, right?
Yep.
And you had some events in between that needed some help, and needed some players to show up, and there were events that you tuned into. I mean, the Memorial, you're going to tune into the Memorial every time. You're going to tune into Bay Hill every time. You know, there were some events you looked forward to. The L.A. Open was you always looked at. You always watched the Hawaiian Open for all good thoughts going way back. You know, I just don't like this. It's so compressed. It's so in your face all the time. You just can't take a breath. You just can't take a breath.
Well, to take that a step further, Tom, I mean, you've got this playoff system in place, right? The lead is a tour championship, right?
Baseball or basketball? Yeah.
But you got three tournaments leading into the tour championship that are playoffs at the end of the year. And you and I know, I mean, as much as we love golf, when week one of the NFL season starts, or college football for that matter, no one's watching a golf tournament.
You got that right.
So you've got all of those things, right? You want to do all these things. We want to have four majors. We need to get them in there. We need to have them spaced out by a month. We need to have these three playoff events, and we need to have a tour championship. And it all has to happen by the end of August because nobody's watching golf starting in September. I think it's just tough to figure out where you're going to put things. But I agree that the idea of these signature events that you want all these players in, and this week's one of them, right?
So why couldn't you do the playoff events? Why couldn't you do the playoff events just Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday instead of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Well, I mean, you're still going against college football on Saturday, right? No one's going to watch.
Yeah, well, yeah. But college football is regional. Let's face it, you know, nobody in New York watches the University of Alabama, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody in Nebraska watches, you know, Florida State, right? It's a very regional broadcast, right? So you're gonna be popular in certain sectors no matter what you do. There's ways to get it done, you know. I mean, I just don't like it.
You are an old grumpy dinosaur.
I am. I am.
Get off my lawn.
Stop peeing on my lawn, please. Thank you.
All right, so a couple more before I let you go. The other guy lost in all of this is another one of your favorite players who finished tied for third, and that was Patrick Cantlay. Now that Xander won the PGA and got his first major, Patty Ice now bears the title of the best player not to win a major. He missed a couple of putts, and he made a couple of bogeys there on the back nine, or he might have been vying to get into a playoff with Bryson or Rory or all three of them.
This was his fifth top five in a major since 2019. We don't talk much about Cantlay as a favorite going into a major, but should we?
Yeah, I mean, and as you know, for other reasons, I'm not a Patrick fan, but I got to tell you what else is impressive about that third place finish. He really, on Saturday and Sunday, did not have his best stuff at all. He really missed a lot of golf shots for him, who was generally a very good ball striker. And he hung in there, and he hung in there, and he hung in there, and he was around right till the end. I mean, he really was around there right till the end. If he had made a couple coming in, he could have been a real factor. So you got to give him credit for that, because he really got a lot out of nothing coming down those last 36 holes. If he gets a little bit slower, you know, you could fall asleep watching him play. He is painfully slow, man. Oh my God. And that's got to affect the guys he's playing with too. You know, I mean, you know, that was an interesting pairing, don't you think, with Joey LeCava in the group with Patrick and Rory and, you know, yep. the whole Ryder convention. Nobody wanted to talk about that on air. That was the elephant in the room that nobody went to, right? Nobody wanted to use that as a storyline in that last pairing. They inconspicuously stayed way away from that thing, you know. Yep. But you and I didn't, and anybody that follows golf really closely and knows anything about golf was thinking, man, how chilly is it in that group right there? But no, he's a legitimate player, man. Whether you like him or you don't like him, and I'm not a fan. He's got game. He's got a lot of game, and he's going to win a major. It's going to happen.
As we look ahead to next month in the Open Championship at Royal Troon, do you think, is it all the usual suspects that you think are going to be vying for the Claret Jug? I mean, is it Scotty, Rory, Bryson, Xander, maybe Shane Lowry for the local favorite? Is it all the same guys, or do you think it's wide open?
You know, I think it's going to be the same guys with those one or two. Who the hell is he popping in there? You know, the one or two of those guys are going to pop in. You're like, who the hell is this guy? But you'll have the usual suspects. Royal Troon, which I've been blessed to play on two occasions, is a really interesting place, Chris. It's I remember the first time I went and I played the first four holes, I thought to myself, this is like an easy muni. 1, 2, 4, like, I mean, they're like, you know, driving and they hit a short iron on a green and green doesn't have much carry and knock it in type of thing. And then all of a sudden you get to 5T and you get a little bit of a wake up call. But I'll tell you, you get on 10T and now you gotta strap your big boots on, because the back nine is a monster. From 5 on, it's pretty darn good, and 10 through 18 are incredibly difficult. So you get out of the gate kind of fast, hopefully, and then you kind of hang on for dear life. If the wind's blowing in the wrong direction, you're going to die a slow death. But it's a great place. It's a great venue. It's a great little town. People in that town are so stoked by the Open being there all the time, and they really, you know, as is all Scotland. But to answer your question, I think you'll have the usual suspects in there. You got to look at guys who can fight their golf ball, who can control their golf ball. I mean, so and I've never really understood Rory being Irish and hitting the high ball, but you know, it'll be interesting to see how he plays there. You know, coming off this situation. Does he bounce back? Scotty had a terrible Open Championship, obviously. Xander's playing great. Cantley's playing great, right? I mean, there's a lot of good guys that are playing good at the right time. And then there's guys that we would like to have play good, but have been absentee, as in Ricky, as in Spieth, as in Justin Thomas, who are just absolutely invisible right now. We got an interesting mix. Shane Lowry, it's a great name for there. Chris, you know, he's played well of recent times, and he's always a good win player. You know, the guy that, you know, is always my dark horse in these things going on, I just think he's so overdue to win both here in the U.S. and a major is Fleetwood. You know, I mean, he just has such game, and he just hasn't done it yet, you know. And you can't count Åberg right now. I mean, the kid is,
yes,
he's on the brink of being an absolute superstar. I mean, you know, just one tick of the clock in the right direction, and he's off to the races. So I wouldn't discount him either.
Tom, before I let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing on your website, on social media, and anywhere else they want to find one of the best teachers in the country.
So Chris, rather than do that, I'm going to share with your listeners my micro version of Rory McIlroy. I was playing in the South Florida Open. Uh-oh. It was the first round. And we have a senior division of South Florida Open that I've really, been preparing. And I, had a tournament a month ago where I had some good things happen that, I could build on. And I was standing on the 11th tee today, one under, and managed Rory McIlroy into 76. So tomorrow's round two. And right now I have a really, really, really bad taste in my mouth. And didn't really hit what I would call a poor shot coming in, but just kind of did the slow burn coming in, the really painful slow burn, kind of just dragging it in there and just screwing this up or screwing that up,
So that's why you've been in a bad mood this whole time.
I'm in a really mood, Chris. I don't want to hear any crap right now. I really don't hear any crap. I kind of go sit in the corner, leave Denise and the dog alone, and see if I can put my head back on my neck and push my brains back in my ears and see if I can get my ass in gear tomorrow morning and get a little fired up and play a good second round. Wow. I'm currently sitting there at T20, and on the 11th tee, I think I was probably at that time of the day, I was probably about third. I can feel Rory's pain right now in a very, very elementary situation.
Explains a lot why you've been crotchety this whole segment. So now I get it.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tom.
Chris, you have a lovely evening.
Hey, Tom, did you see that the Red Sox stole 9 bases against the Yankees this past weekend? Did you see that? Bye, Tom. That was our man, Tom Patry. I was kind of wondering why he was so crotchety all through this segment. And then at the end there, we find out why. So he can relate to Rory a little bit. Things go south in a golf tournament. Things go south in our golf games from time to time. Got to just put it in the rear view, right? We talk about that a lot on the mental side of the game. Play the next shot. I know Tom will bounce back tomorrow. Why? Because he's a great player and a great guy and one of the best instructors in the game. He'll figure out what went wrong on the back nine and correct that and do very well, I'm sure, in round two. So Tom will be back in a couple of weeks. I'm already looking forward to it. Joining me next is going to be 2013 Senior Open champion Mark Wiebe. Before I bring Mark into the show, I was talking with Eddie Dry, VP of Domestic Sales for Strixon Cleveland Golf, at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year. And I said, Eddie, I like your CBX full-face wedges. How can they help an average player like me play better? Here's what he had to say.
An average player, I use one, and I'm in some lies that you can't even believe. And I need all the help I can get. And the face is bigger, and the grooves go all the way up and all the way out to the toe. So if you hit it on the toe, you miss it, bam, there's a groove. So I like that. So I carry a 58.
There you have it, folks. Try the new CBX full face wedges from Cleveland Golf. I also want to give a shout out to my friends over at On Point Golf and their great On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there with alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us.
See what I'm talking about. Order yours today.
All right, now back in making it a baker's dozen times with me here on Next on the Tee is 2013 Senior Open champion and one of the top instructors in our game now, and that is Mark Wiebe. Let me remind you a little bit about Mark's background. He's from Seaside, Oregon, and grew up in Escondido, California. Played his college golf at Palomar Junior College and then transferred to San Jose State. But while at Palomar, he was the individual medalist at the 1977 California and Idaho Amateur Championships. He was named second-team All-American in 1979 at San Jose State. And that season, he and Don Levin combined to win the Silverado Invitational in Napa, California. Mark turned pro in 1980 and started on the PGA Tour in 1983. Got his first career win at the 1985 Anheuser-Busch Classic when he beat our friend John Mahaffey with a birdie on the first playoff hole. Mark won again the following year at the 1986 Hardy's Golf Classic. In 2007, Mark matched Bobby Watkins' record for being the youngest winner on the Champions Tour at 50 years and 10 days old when he won the SAS Championship. Like I say, in 2013, he won the Senior Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, did it by defeating Bernhard Langer on the fifth playoff hole. Later in 2013, he captured the Pacific Links Hawaii Championship in a playoff over Corey Pavin. In all, he won 8 times as a professional, twice on the PGA Tour, 5 times on the Champions Tour, plus the 1986 Colorado Open. He's a great guy and a wonderful friend, and I couldn't be more thrilled to get to have him back with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Mark, how are you, my friend?
Chris, how are you doing, buddy? Thanks for the great introduction there.
I'm fantastic, and thank you so much for being here. Happy belated Father's Day, too, my friend.
Yeah, how about that? You two, you have kids, right?
And got 3.
Yeah.
How's the family and the newest grandbaby?
Well, let me see. We're up to 5 grandkids, and I got my youngest is in Chicago with 1 little girl. My oldest is in Montana, and she has 3 kids: girl, boy, girl. And then my son actually lives here in the area in Phoenix, and about 30 or 40 minutes away, and they have 1 little girl. So everybody's doing great, and being a grandpa is awesome.
Good for you, my friend.
No doubt.
So, Mark, I keep wondering every time I turn on PGA Tour radio when I'm going to hear the Mark Wiebe show. I know we've talked about this a couple of times recently when you've been on the show. Any closer to us getting Mark on the radio?
Well, I've kind of sent out a couple feelers to a couple people and said, you know, I'd love to do it. I'm probably closer to the edgy side of things than I am walking down the middle of the lane. But I think we need a little of that too. So, you know, I guess when the timing's right, maybe that will come about.
I certainly hope so. So that begs the question, if you're walking more on the edgy side of the game, what are some things that have got you kind of scratching your head?
Well, lots. The first thing that comes to mind is what a great U.S. Open championship. Scratching my head is the way Rory acted and leaving the facility.
Yeah.
Scratching my head a little bit. And not that I'm on Rory's level whatsoever, not even close. But I remember losing the Kemper Open way back when. Played great all week, and I three-putted the last 2 holes to lose to Justin Leonard by 1 shot. And the last place I wanted to go was the media room, and the first place I went was the media room. So you got to suck it up. And I understand it's tough. Man, it's hard, and he has a different life than me, but that makes me scratch my head a little bit. And I'm not one that's going to give a pass because of you were really down or it was really hard on you or any of that. I think that there's a certain obligation to you, yourself and your family and your name and your fans and the media. And I was pretty disappointed with that, actually. And it's too bad for him because it came on the heels of Bryson being right there going over and congratulating Xander at the PGA doing the thing that you're supposed to do. And I don't think he avoided the media. I know he didn't bogey coming in, but he lost by a shot. So,
yeah,
on the heels of a great example of how you should be, was probably not the worst example, but probably not a great example, or maybe a good example of how you shouldn't be, I guess.
Yeah. Tom Patrick and I were talking about this in the first segment, and I agree with you, Mark. For a guy that is now, like it or not, the face of the PGA Tour, and I know they haven't treated him well, really stuck him out there and then left him high and dry, and he's got a lot of other things going on in his life. He and his wife and family, they've had some struggles, so he's had some things off the golf course, plus the live thing and all of that sort of thing that has gone on. But yeah, like I said to Tom, that's not what Arnold Palmer would have done. That's not what Jack Nicklaus would have done. That's not what Tiger Woods would have done. And probably the majority of the players out there. I know it hurts, and I get all of that. And to hear the questions and having to relive it over and over again as people want to know what was going through your mind and this, that, and the other thing. But I almost think that's part of it. When you sign up to be a player out on the PGA Tour, you got to take the good with the bad. And I think that that was a really bad image of him just packing it up and getting in his car and leaving. And on some level, Mark, I might have given him a pass for not talking to the media. But like you said, Bryson went over to Xander, shook his hand, told him well played and all that sort of thing. I think Rory could have at least gone out there, shook Bryson's hand, talk about what a great, you know, battle it was. I came up a little short. I got some things I got to go work on. The short putting thing is something I got to fix, so I can go defend my Scottish Open and play better in the Open Championship. He could have been really gracious about the whole thing. I just think it was really, really a bad look for him.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I know it's hard and I understand. But you know what? That's just part of growing up. You know, you gotta be able to, suck it up and talk about it. I mean, it's hard. Like I said, I understand it. I went through that on a way smaller scale, but it was a tour tournament and I was devastated. But you got to go in and deal with it. It's part of it. I mean, I had somebody when I was younger that told me once, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, you need to learn to lose before you need to learn to win, because losing makes you tougher, but it also humbles you. So I don't know if that has anything to do with Rory's situation, but, you know, be humble in victory and gracious in the things that you want people to see in you. Dodging and then, you know, I understand withdrawing from the next tournament. You know, he's devastated and he wants to go home and lick his wounds, and he does have personal problems. That aside, you got to suck it up when it's time to suck it up. I mean, I was kind of bummed for him. I'm not a huge Rory fan. I think he's an incredible golfer. But I'm going to root for the US of A probably more than the opposite team, so to speak, with the Ryder, you know, him being on the Ryder Cup and stuff. I'm going to root for the guy from here, just because I like it, my, you know, apple pie and all the stuff that is on that commercial. So
are there other things that made you scratch your head about what's going on with the game just in general?
You know, I'm still a little perplexed about this limiting our fields and the size of things. At the same time, still allowing as many players as ever to be part of the tour. All you're really doing now is giving a lot of the guys an opportunity to qualify on Mondays. You know, I'm just watching, like, I think I maybe mentioned this last time. I'm a huge sports geek. I watch everything. And I do know this, that every sport that I can even come up with in my head right now is expanding. There's expansion teams, expansion leagues. There's too many players. And golf is no different. We have a long line of incredible golfers that no one's heard of yet. But yet we're taking our field sizes from max of 156 in the summer and 144 when it's not summer. We're trying to give as many guys an opportunity to play as we can. And now we're shrinking them down to these signature events, more and more of those. And I'm not agreeing with at all that somebody that gets on the tour that's not in signature events has to compete against someone that is in all of the signature events and the majors. The prize money that you're playing for in each case is drastically different. And I think we're a little bit lost. I think I'm not saying that Monahan's the leader, because I never thought of the commissioner as my leader ever. He was the commissioner. The leaders were the players. And I watched it like a magic trick turn into the commissioner became a little bit like the president of a company and kind of made things happen that he wanted to happen, or a certain very small minority of people wanted to happened. And at the same time, telling the players it's the players' tour. It was my negative part of being on the tour. I really was bummed about that, and I'm seeing it happen now. And I also have a son that plays and is on the DP World Tour. So he wants to play the tour. I want him to play the tour, but shrinking spots and shrinking fields doesn't help him with any opportunities to play. And the first thing you're going to hear from guys that are on the other side is, oh, just play better. Well, opportunity has a lot to do with that too. You know, when you can, you know, pick and choose where you want to play and play for a gazillion dollars, and you're not going to probably lose your spot on tour if you're in those signature events. I don't know how you could. You'd have to have a miserable year. So, you know, those things make me scratch my head, and there's nothing that's going to be done about it until there's something done about it. But there's nothing I'm going to say that's going to change things. And I don't want to be known as a complainer. I pay attention to things, and I watch, and I try to judge things on, is this wrong or right? Is it good or bad? What are you doing to get as many guys an opportunity to make as much money as they possibly can? Are you doing that?
So let's take that a step further though, Mark, because as we've learned over the last few weeks, looking at the tour council, right? We've had Jimmy Dunn resign on the spot because he said there wasn't appreciable movement in those talks and his role was superfluous. We had, you know, a week or two later, Mark Flaherty, another independent member of the board, resign. Now you've got the majority of players on that council and Jay Monahan on the other side, maybe one or two other independent people, but the players are way outranking or outnumbering, I should say, the independent people. Are you concerned at all about who is now leading conversations with a yes or our mind, and who's making decisions on behalf of the PGA Tour? Is it better that there are more players? And my concern would be you don't have very many smart businessmen in there. You've got great players. I don't know how smart they are business-wise. You've lost two smart ones, and now you're trying to negotiate with a guy like Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who's in charge of the PIF and all that sort of thing. I've got some concern about who's making such decisions about the future of our game at the professional level. Do you have any concern about that?
Huge concern, along with many tour players that have been vocal in social media that I've read about in articles. And I'm hugely concerned. I mean, obviously, it's not working the way it is right now. there's not much I can say positive about the commissioner and his staff right now, so I'm not going to say anything bad about him. I just have nothing positive to say about him. But it does concern me because I don't know. Maybe I know everyone has learned this, but usually smart people surround themselves with smarter people. Or you don't even have to be smart to start with, but you surround yourself with people that have knowledge in those areas. And I'm not sure that's what we're doing. But I sure would love to see that. I would love to see not just players, but I do want a player's voice for sure in those meetings. But I want a player's voice that is not heavy on one side or the other of the top. We should have signature events, and I don't want someone that said we shouldn't have any signature events. I would like someone in there that can see everything and make a good decision or a good judgment that's good for the whole, not just good for the top 20 or 30 guys. This is, we're missing the point here. This is the PGA Tour. This is not the World Tour. This is the PGA Tour. So I know the PGA Tour thinks it needs to expand and play in all these different countries, and maybe so. I'm not a businessman. I wouldn't know that. But I do know it's the PGA Tour, and we have so much that we rely on, for instance, the Ryder Cups, or, we have our home bases here. It's not anywhere else, and I would love us to pay more attention to our sponsorships in the United States. At the same time, I do love the fact that golf is expanding and going around the world. I think that's awesome. I don't care what tour. I think that's awesome. I don't think our tour should spend as much time outside of the United States, meaning I don't think half the tournaments should be outside of the United States and half should be in. I think we need to have our majority, and so we can get our companies to profit, and the companies here in the United States to profit, and the people here that live here, the fans. Now, the people that go out are the people that are viewing on TV. Give them a chance to watch a golf tournament. That's where I would like to see more of our lean in a direction, probably more that way. But I do love the fact that we do have some expanding and going around the globe. I think that's awesome. No doubt about it. I also am I'm a huge sports fan, and I know that I'm shifting gears slightly, but not too much. But I know that when there's tennis tournaments going on, there's also opposite tennis tournaments going on. And there's races going on, car races that are going on at the same times. So not every single great tennis player is playing against each other all year. They come together at the majors, and they all kind of try to make their way through. In the meantime, somebody's playing over here and somebody's playing over there. Somebody's playing in Spain for something, and somebody's over in France playing in a tennis tournament. So, if we're going to really send this thing global, then let's go ahead. But you're going to need more players. You can't just do it. You can't have the same group of guys go to the same tournaments, because it's going to become boring to watch the same guys. Now, this is me. I'm a player. I'm a fan. And it's totally my opinion. And you know that already, because, yep. So that's how I'm trying to look at things, because it's a mess. It's just a mess right now. And you don't get to know anything, because only there's certain guys, Tiger and whoever having these little talks that they don't tell you anything. They say, oh, it's moving in the right direction. Okay. You know, I get that. I understand what you're saying. You don't want to say anything. So,
yeah.
You know, I'd like to know. I mean, I think it'd be cool to know.
Right. I think we all do.
Yeah, I think we all. And you know what? I was never a big, you know, I had bad press and I had guys say stuff about me and all that. But I also knew that it was part of the deal. So you can address yourself in a way that's professional, tell the truth, respond to questions, do things the right way. That gets you a lot farther, I think. Again, just agreed. My opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Mark, one more before I let you go. As we look ahead now to the next major, the Open Championship at Royal Troon, I saw that you played there in the 97 Open and again in 2008 at the Senior Open.
Yes.
Talk about what we're going to see there next month.
Oh, my gosh. So this was my very first British Open in my life was at Troon. My very first Senior British Open was at Troon. So obviously Troon is I got something about Troon, I guess. It's an awesome golf course. It is, weather will dictate how the scores are. If you remember Henrik and Phil going at it shooting, what did they shoot? Like 60 and 61 or 61. It was stupid. I mean,
right.
But the weather was beautiful and perfect. So if that were to happen, there's scoring going on. But if there's just a little wind or a little rain or a little, maybe a little of both, it changes things totally. It's a unique golf course in the fact that it actually kind of goes out through seven, comes back on the postage stamp, goes out one more time, gets really close to Royal Prestwick, where the British Open originated with 36 holes, because it was a 12-hole golf course when they played it three times. So you're always walking on history and near history when you're playing Troon. I mean, it is incredible vibe that you get. It makes you so excited. It's beyond. Anyway, and then you make your way back, with the exception of, I think 11 or 12 comes back. I think maybe number 12 comes back out towards Prestwick, and then it's all the way in. So it's a unique golf course in that way. There are sand dunes. There's ocean that you, or not ocean. There's water that comes into play. The sea is right there. And you don't think it would ever come into play until you get one of those days with that weather or the wind blowing that direction, or better yet, the wind blowing off the water to where you have to aim it way out over the water and trust that wind is going to blow it back. So it's awesome, awesome golf course, great history. I'll be so excited to see if it's the usual suspects, meaning there's about, I don't know, five or six guys that keep lingering around the top of those major leaderboards. And you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Rory and Xander. And Home has been absent lately, but Bryson is right there. And you know, who knows right now, with, by the way, side story with him. Right now, the sky's the limit. He's a young kid. I don't think he has any kids or a wife or any, not obligations, but things to take your mind off of golf. I think that when he gets into it, he gets into it. And my favorite, also another side story, my favorite thing about watching him play this week, I don't think he won the Open with his length. I think he won it with his short game.
Yes.
I think if we all watched it, we saw an incredible talent around the greens on those lies and putting, but the pitching and the bunker shots were, for a guy that can bomb the ball and hits it that far, to honestly say he won that tournament with his short game, not his long game. And we all watched it. It was incredible. Anyway, he's in there. So I would expect that Brooks Koepka is going to get a little bit of motivation now because fellow LIV player is kind of ripping these majors. My God, second, sixth, and first in our first three majors. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Indeed.
So I think we can look for those same guys, but you know, the British Open always brings that one player or two players from the UK that are either mini tour pros or somebody that's young on the DP tour. There's always that great story. And you get those when you play a full field. So the British Open is not a signature event. It's a full field event. So you're going to have incredible stories the whole week long about the favorites, about the wannabes, about the underdogs. And then the weather is always the main topic of conversation. So
right,
it's my favorite tournament I've ever played in, ever. I've played in all of them. I just think it's a world open. I think, obviously, I'm not shortchanging the Masters or the U.S. Open or the PGA. They're incredible tournaments. But to me, a worldwide event seems to be, for me anyway, is the British Open. And I can't wait. I just can't wait.
Me too. Mark, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they follow you, whether it's online or it's on social media?
You know, I'm on, I do a lot of Instagram, and I think it's just Mark Wiebe. Just look me up and it's on there. I don't remember what my handle is. Do a little bit of the X, not really. I do a lot of the Instagram. And I talk a lot about short game. And if you ever really need to get a hold of me or look on my website, that is markwiebegolf.com. And you can get my anything from there. You get my email, you can get what I do and how I teach. And I'm there and I'm available. So I really, in my second life now, I really do love teaching. I really do. It's there's nothing quite like helping someone shoot lower and seeing their faces. It's fantastic of any level too. I really do enjoy it.
Well, Mark, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to come back and be a part of the show for a 13th time tonight. You know, you're one of my all time favorites, and it's been 13 and I can't wait for number 14. I hope it's very soon.
You're awesome, buddy. Thank you so much. And go lucky 13.
Indeed. Take care, Mark. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks so much, Chris.
See you, Weebs.
Talk to you later.
That is the great Mark Wiebe. At Mark Wiebe Golf is where you can find him on Instagram. That's his handle over there, at Mark Wiebe 33 over on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling that thing. And if you live out in Arizona, go get a playing lesson from a major champion who also happens to be a fantastic guy. You'll be certainly glad that you did. Mark, like I say, is just one of my all-time favorite people, let alone guests on this show. But he is just such a wonderful human being that has, like I said, graced the show 13 times. I'm so blessed that he has done that. And I'm sincere, boy, I just can't wait till the next time. Every time I get to spend some time with him, I learn something, whether it's about the game of golf, the inner workings of the game, or sometimes with some playing lessons. Mark is just one of the great people you get to meet in this industry and you get to meet in this life. And I've been blessed 13 times, and I'm looking forward to number 14, hopefully a little bit later on this year. All right, folks, it is time for me to put a bow on part one of this week's episode. My sincere thanks to Tom Patry and Mark Wiebe for making it so much fun. Coming up in part two is going to be one of the best fitness instructors on the planet, and that is Courtney Weber, along with one of the best quarterback coaches on the planet, Cree Morris, who's also a fine golfer as well. So looking forward to having them join me here in part two. So stay tuned for that. I'll be dropping here in a couple of days. In the meantime, as always, thank you so much for making Next on the Tee a part of your weekly golf content. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.